Good Friday afternoon. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Socolo Village Studio. It's October 14th. I'm Dan Scheer, editor of the Green Valley News and the Sahuarita Sun, sitting in for Bill, who's been enjoying Canada all week with his wife, Anne. His Facebook page gives a glimpse of the trip, which we always appreciate seeing. So thank you, Bill and Anne. Bill is here live weekdays at noon, or you can catch the live stream or access all the archives at buckmastershow.com. On Fridays, Bill gives a shout out to the Buckmaster Show media partners. Those include TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News, Sahuarita Sun, Tucson Local Media, Tucson Weekly. You'll find all of these and more on his website. In our Friday's Focus interview today, we're going to be talking about the curious world of polling, especially during an election year, with an expert on the subject out of Phoenix. And if you have questions or a comment, you can join us. Call us at 520-790-2040. That's the Buckmaster Show live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Joining me is Dylan Smith. He's editor and publisher of TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, always great to see you.
Great to be here, trying to fill Bill's big shoes. It takes both of us to do that.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's
got to
be getting cold up in Canada right now.
Why
is he there? Come on, Bill.
If you've seen the pictures, you know it's worth it. Absolutely gorgeous.
Beautiful
spots.
Cold.
Yeah. I don't know. I was out walking the dog the other day and thought, man, I might need to have a light jacket. It was 75. And my wife just looked at me and just shook her head.
You're a desert rat, aren't you?
I'm sunk. So joining us by phone from the Metro Phoenix area is Mike Noble. Mike is the chief of research for OH Predictive Insights, which does market research, public opinion polling, data analytics, and a lot more that he's going to tell us about. Welcome, Mike.
Well, Dylan and Dan, thanks so much for having me on, especially for me being a city slicker up here in Maricopa County. So I'm very appreciative.
And if you think that we are aspiring to join you, you would be dead wrong. So you can have it, because we know it never cools down there, actually. So having grown up in that area, so you can have it. Yeah.
Tucson's beautiful. It's one of my favorite spots. I think Tucson and Sedona are hands down my top two places in Arizona.
Yeah, it is. It's definitely eclectic, as they say. So next time, head farther south, you'll get to Green Valley and Sahuarita. And we always should say that the sun shines just a little bit brighter down there. So
and there's some great wineries down there south, which I didn't even aware that there were wineries down south in Tucson. And they're really fantastic. So just again, Tucson is just an amazing place.
You know, we actually put together a magazine every year called Discover Southern Arizona, and I just finished going through it. And there's about a dozen wineries. You're exactly right. Ooh. Some new ones, actually, and people always talking about opening those. And I don't drink myself, so I'm not much fun on a wine tour. But I'm sure Dylan has probably, other than that $2 chuck he usually buys. How do you?
Well, they raised the price to $3 a while back.
Whoa.
And I had to give that up. It's a little too steep for me.
I am sorry, but you know,
24 days till Election Day. I think you know that might be.
He's going to need it.
I've just moved straight into the whiskey. No worries.
Okay, so we're going to get into it here, but we actually have a caller on the line before we've had the guest. Who is that, Tom? Send him on through. Hey, who's on the line here?
This is Al.
Al, hi.
Good. I wanted to been trying to give you a compliment for the longest time, because whenever you're on a radio show, you don't give the milquetoast questions. You give the hard-hitting ones, and you keep asking the person until you get a real answer, not just, you know, shying around, oh, I'm going over here. And I want to very much appreciate that. You're a breath of fresh air.
I really appreciate that. And with that, we will now turn our sights on Mike Noble, who suddenly has to go.
Turn your sights. What great language right there. I mean,
and intentional.
Great for the listener, bad for the interviewee.
Yeah, and don't pretend the line just started to go bad, because
he's going into a tunnel.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll keep calling you back. But you and I have had a couple of discussions on polling and how it's changed, and it is an absolutely fascinating thing. By the way, thank you, Al. I appreciated hearing that. Let's take, first of all, tell us a little bit about you and about OH Predictive Insights.
Yeah, no, great question. So for myself, from Wisconsin originally, came out here in my very young teen days. My mom brought us out here to Arizona, and it's been home sweet home ever since. And it's been truly a blessing. Graduated from Arizona State University. Go Sun Devils. Sorry, Wildcats. And and it's funny. I spent two halves of my professional career. My first half was I spent in political campaigns or as a political consultant for 8 years. So really on the ground and how campaigns actually work. So not by a number standpoint, but the actual way. But then I saw the light, and now I've been a recovering consultant. I became a pollster for the last about 7 years now, maybe wow. eight now. About 7 years I've been professionally doing, and started OH Predictive Insights about 6 years ago. But I started as a Republican pollster because that's where I was when coming out of politics, and kind of the only place I could go. But only a few years into it, and this would probably be about 5 years ago, we made the fateful move of moving to nonpartisan, because really you had to make a choice in your career. You either do public, you're either polling for the red team or the blue team, or nonpartisan, which there's very few of us, and that's where your loyalty is not to any one party, your loyalty is to kind of the truth in the data or truth in the numbers. And I couldn't have been happier for the change, especially with Arizona being a battleground state. So that's kind of a little bit about it, but basically a nerdery here in the desert. And we have a pretty outsized role. We pull here in Arizona consistently, but also Nevada, which is a key battleground state, and also the state of Utah. So kind of coming kind of that Southwest regional player.
And Mike, first off, well, Milwaukee's like barely Wisconsin. I'm from up north.
That's Dylan talking. Yeah.
But that aside, you're just totally a city boy. Anyway, let's dig into that sort of Republican Democratic pollster concept for a minute. Mm-hmm. When these folks who are frequently working for one party that we would those of us in the press would commonly call them that's a Republican polling firm, that's a Democratic polling firm, because those are the candidates they work for. When they put out a public poll, should people be more skeptical of those numbers than they would be from someone who is trying to be just straight down the middle, nonpartisan, dedicated to the data? Are some of those numbers a little bit skewed, perhaps? Or
And it's great, and it's a great question, and it's interesting is that they typically are. Again, not all of them are. You'll still have some good ones in there, but that's why I think you see a lot out there. They'll delineate between, hey, this is a Democrat polling firm or a Republican polling firm, and then, of course, nonpartisan, or they don't have any conflicts of interest. And it's important because, and that's not saying all of them are bad, it's just you should look at them a little closer. So, for example, good examples of it is like when you see internal polls that come out from campaigns. Those are always suspect because they'll put out the top line, but they don't give you all the other information where you can actually go and check it to actually see, because you're basically taking their word for it. And it seems like they always are polling. It happens to show them in the lead. Yeah. You know, it's usually a bit higher than.
Or if they want to raise some money, they're like, we're down by 3 points. But they never tell you exactly who they talked to, right? What the demographic breakdown was.
Yeah, but that's
they'll give you a little bit, but not enough.
Not under the crosstabs like we want to see, where we can kind of really dig into those numbers and figure out how people are trending, not just kind of that top line number of X percent.
And in journalism school, they teach you roughly 10 questions to ask when you're writing a poll story. And of course, it's how they reach it, how many people, what's the margin of error. There's several things. And if you don't get the answers to all those questions, there's a very good chance that this is a skewed poll. I don't know any journalist worth his or her salt who takes something from a campaign and runs with it, as far as the polling yeah. goes. Other than we you know, sometimes we chuckle a little bit, but it's so yeah, you know what's coming out of it. But let's go back to your primary polling, and I found yeah. it really interesting. It was a very interesting summer, and mostly because of what was coming out of your place. By the way, OH Predictive Insights has a very good reputation. I want people to know that, and it's and I enjoy what you do. For the most part, you were right on with the primary results, or not right on, but darn close. Were you happy with how that all turned out?
You know, it's a great question, and it's funny. It's interesting the standard for pollsters, which is essentially everyone expects us to be 100% perfect, but like in any profession or anything else, that's just simply not the case. But the bar that, at least for myself, set is basically, if it's not perfect, I'm not happy. And so it was interesting with like the primary, for example, you know, we had Nevada's primaries there for governor, Senate, nailed both those, all within the margin, great. In Arizona, we had, I think, 5 or 6 races. So we had the gubernatorial primary, the Senate primary, and then the down ticket races, which are your, you know, AG, Attorney General, Secretary of State, Treasurer, and then Superintendent of Public Instruction. And it was interesting. All of those came in exactly in line where we expect them to be. But the one that I wasn't fully happy with was on the governor's race. So in the governor's race, our final poll, we had Carrie Lake's vote share at 51%, and her actual was 48%. And the poll's margin of error is roughly just over 4%. And so it's well within that margin of error. So boom, nailed Lake support. That was great. But where the part that, you know, could have tweaked that in a little bit more was Karen Taylor Robeson's support. We had her at 33% of the vote share, but she ended up outperforming that and getting about 43%. So doing about 10 points better. And when going through that, because, you know, expecting everything came out the way we expected, but that one, hey, it looks like we underrepresented that that share of the vote. And when looking back, it seemed to be a mode issue. So how you're collecting your survey, you want to really balance it out between about 40% landline, 60% cell phones. So no matter if you're doing, you know, text surveys or, you know, live callers or even automated, you're going to want to make sure that mode balance is reflective of the electorate. And so that one, it was very skewed to cell phones. And we knew Lake supporters, she was doing best with pretty much every single age group except for 75 and older. And remember, our GOP primaries are very older electorates. So it's 75 groups, so there wasn't a lot of landlines, but a lot of them have those. And basically, that underrepresented Robeson, we didn't capture as much of that as we would have liked. And that's one from the postmortem where I think that was a factor. And I think the other factor was there was still about 12% undecided, which is kind of a lot for being a week out on a gubernatorial matchup. And when we dug down into it, asked some questions like, why are you voting for Carrie Lake or Karen Taylor Robeson? We saw that, you know, the people that are voting for Carrie Lake, they were locked in. They were all for Carrie Lake. There wasn't really moving those folks. However, with Robeson, it wasn't really that they were voting for her. It was kind of like, well, I don't like Lake, but they weren't really enthused with her. So those undecideds broke the other way. So between the mode portion and that, I believe is kind of where that underrepresented, but again, still predicted the winner correct. But that was one where, again, but most people never talk about their issues they have. They only talk about their wins, which I wish people would, you know, be more accountable, frankly.
Well, yeah, no kidding. The media, of course, have been, you know, raked over the coals, and a lot of that's Donald Trump, who has raised just all sorts yeah. of, you know, questions and everything. Is that happening to the polling industry, too? And the real question here yeah. to you is, are people lying to you?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. So on the lying part, for our experience, we really haven't run into that or seen that. Really haven't had that issue in our polling because we do a lot of quality control checks. So before you actually see that final result of the poll, it goes through a lot of quality assurance processes ultimately to make sure, you know, hey, are we talking to the right person? Is this data correct? Because if not, then we'll be misrepresenting. And it's interesting is that this attack or on the institutional attacking on polling, especially in the last 4 years, I would say, and media is right in line with it, is that, you know, for a poll, if they don't like the poll, because, you know, here's the reality. Two people running in a race, it's a visceral contest. Here's the reality. One's most likely going to be up and one's most likely going to be down. It's not usually always tied. So here's the thing is that when it's up, the candidate that's up, they're like, yeah, that's what our internals show. Yeah, that's about right. Or they just act like that's a given. But the ones that are down, they go, oh, that's no, that's BS. That's, you know, they basically discard it because it's just, what do you say? Oh, yeah, that poll's right. Shows me down 8 points. Right. They're never going to admit it.
I'm going to tell you this. I had a candidate do that to me once. He was polling at 7%. I can name him, but I'm not going to. And his opponent was over 50. And he goes, I'm right where I want to be. And I said, well, wouldn't you rather be at the 50? That's right where I'd want to be. And of course, he ended up losing. Stunning. But he looked me right in the eye and said that, and I thought, man, you are a politician. So anyway, so your margin of error, at what percentage do you get a little nervous about it? You've sent out some polls recently, and it was around 3.8. What do you start saying, gosh, I don't like that?
Yeah, I'd say anything over basically 5%, I would say 5% or higher, I'm nervous. You know, in the mid fours, a little bit more, but usually 4% or less is a good spot where you want to be. And what you see basically with the margin of error, and for folks that it's interesting with margin of error, you can explain it the wonky academic way, but I'd say the simplest, most digestible way for folks is that margin of error, so let's say it's a plus or minus 4%. So basically what that says is the number you're looking at is a fuzzy number. So let's say, for example, you have a candidate at 50% of the vote. Well, it could be 54% or it could be 46%. So again, it's that fuzziness in the number, and the same thing goes with the other person's number. So if it is a horse race, for example, and it shows, like we put out governor numbers this morning on the state of the gubernatorial contest here in Arizona, and it was I think Lake roughly 47, Hobbs 44. So it's a 3 points, and people go, oh, it's 3 points. You know, this person's winning. It's like, well, no. It's actually really a toss up, like that, because again, within that margin, Hobbs could be at 48 roughly, and then Lake could be at 43 or 44. So when you see that margin of error, just kind of look at it as like the fuzziness of the number.
Okay,
essentially,
that's the spread that goes on basically both sides of the number that you're putting.
Yes. Yes.
So it's not even you're not picking the middle portion of, say, a 4-point margin of error. You're not picking the middle number in 4 points. It's plus or minus that.
Right.
So
it could be anywhere.
Yeah.
So, okay. We are in the midst of our Friday Focus interview with Mike Noble. He is Chief of Research for OH Predictive Insights out of the Phoenix area. And just before our break is Bill's favorite time to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. I was on the air on Monday with Don Jorgensen, who just off the air, he was just gushing about Mona's. He loves it. He was bummed out because they were closed that day. But he was just
Use a sugar hit right
now.
Oh,
I tell you, they've got a lot more than you could guess over there. It's the place everyone's talking about. Mona's on northeastern corner of Swan and Sunrise, home of the Danish Kringle. Mona's Danish Bakery is open for breakfast, lunch, with indoor and patio dining, plus online orders and pickup are welcome. Mona's, northeastern corner of Swan and Sunrise. You're listening to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolo Village Studio. Our live line is made possible by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure,
My air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
The way we vote in Pima County is changing. Are you ready? The League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson invites you to visit ReadySetVoteTucson.com to learn about new vote centers for easier in-person voting, new voting districts, and changes to the early voting list. Get ready to vote at ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Brought to you by the League of Women Voters of Greater Tucson. That's ReadySetVoteTucson.com. Get ready to vote.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
I'm Dan Scheer, sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, and welcome to the Buckmaster Show. I'm with Mike Noble and his polling organization, OH Predictive Insights. And also in studio with us is Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. Mike, you gave us a little hint about what you're seeing for the November 8th election in that governor's race. Can you tell us a little bit more about what you're planning to do or have done for November 8th?
Yeah, so regarding the governor's race, which I think is probably the most, what we do know, actually, when we've asked voters, like, you know, what races are you most following? Governor is actually the highest, followed, not too far by the U.S. Senate race. So there's kind of the two biggies. But the governor's race, so we just polled just last week. So it was our poll to get a snapshot of where the electorate was at as they headed into early voting, because early balloting started. I believe ballots were dropped in the mail this past Wednesday.
Correct.
So we were in the field the previous week. So to see where things were at, and the poll results showed that it was a 47 Carrie Lake and 43 Katie Hobbs in the contest. And what's interesting is that really with the numbers, at least, when you look at that contest, is that Carrie Lake, one of the issues of her coming out of the primary, she was struggling with her base of support because of kind of that visceral primary she had. She had about $18 million spent against her during that. And so she had a little bit of a shaky base, so she needed to kind of consolidate that. But the polling shows that, you know, it looks like the Republicans have not only come on board, but they're kind of, united behind her. And then same thing with Democrats. They're doing the same thing with Katie Hobbs. So Republicans are voting Republicans, Democrats are voting Democrats. So, but those all-important independents, and this is interesting because just a decade ago, independents just organically always leaned about 5 or 6 points to the right or lean towards Republicans. And it's interesting, this election time, these independents are actually leaning a little bit to the left. And in Hobbs's case, she has a six-point edge with independents over Carrie Lake. So it's kind of interesting to see that split, and there's about 10% undecided in the contest. And so basically the race is a toss-up right now, and really those 10% that are remaining are really going to be the difference makers.
Are you seeing something similar in the other races as well as the gubernatorial primer? I mean,
That's a great question. And so the gubernatorial race, that's kind of going more on partisan lines. But what's interesting about the Arizona Senate race, the other big one in the room, you see that Mark Kelly's in a more comfortable position than Carrie Lake is. Because there's just a big difference in broadcast spending. So Mark Kelly over in that contest has outspent Masters 2-1 on the airwaves, and that's from a dollar standpoint, but from gross rating points is which how you kind of the true measurement of broadcast, which is your tonnage or how many ads and how big your reach is. It's almost a 4-1 Mark Kelly's advantage over Masters. So just Masters has really kind of been beat up since he's come out of that primary to Election Day, and he wasn't a very known candidate to start off with, so he's kind of got his unfavorables are kind of high. So with that contest, it's a little bit, it leans Mark Kelly right now, where the governor's race is very much a toss-up.
You know, the media and the candidates are telling us that this year's election is all about abortion and election integrity. Are you in a position to tell us what the people are saying?
Yeah. We actually asked that on that previous poll, and it was interesting. We have like issue trackers, right, that we have, but when you set up a tracking question, you really can't mess with the answers on it because then the tracker is kind of void because you're not keeping it apples to apples. So what was interesting is that we went on this most recent poll, so not even a week or so ago. We asked, hey, to this likely voting electorate, what are your top issues? So the top issues was 25% or a quarter of the electorate was economy and inflation. And then you had 17% saying abortion was the issue. So that could be either on the pro-life side or on the pro-choice side. It could be either or. Immigration was at 15%, but that was actually tied with threats to democracy at 15%. And then education, interestingly enough, is only at 8%, which it's typically gotten higher in issue importance the last few election cycles, but we're just not seeing it this time around.
But the economy could not have surprised you.
No, it's been the top issue for some time now in Arizona, and the border kind of fluctuates basically when you see like the migrant caravan issue or when, you know, kind of the border stuff really kind of makes it more in the headlines, you'll see that issue kind of pop up a little bit more. But social issues in general typically will always get pushed down by economic pain points, because when we start hitting people's pocketbooks and kind of their necessities in life, that'll typically override some of these other, you know, social issues that are important, but just, you know, it's kind of a Maslow's hierarchy of needs at that point.
You did a couple of interesting polls, and the question is, how do you decide on the topics? One of them was disparity within the GOP on the Mar-a-Lago search sentiment. And in that one, you actually had to find Republicans who support Trump and then just Republicans. And how did you word that to people?
Forgive me if I don't repeat the exact wording, but I'm pretty close. You basically ask, because that's the thing about the party that's going on right now, is that you basically there's a civil war going on, which you unequivocally is going on. But the question is, how do you kind of tease that out of them? Pollsters have different ways to go about it. At least for myself, it's essentially asking a party loyalty question. It's like, hey, are you, would you say you're a bigger supporter, are you more of a supporter of Trump or the Republican Party as it is? Because we found that the Trump stuff, it's not about the brand or the name. It's very much about Trump himself. It's like a following of personality compared to, you know, are they party loyal, which is more the platform and everything else. And you see that it's a divide in that group. It comes out to like 44% roughly. And if you look at like the GOP down ticket, especially all the Democrats that or all the Republicans that won down ticket, the Abe Hamada for Attorney General or some of those others that had the Trump endorsement, they had no money. There weren't known candidates whatsoever, but they won with about 40%, 44% of the vote. And it's that group is that it's a very unmovable group, but that's really the divide of the Trump folks and then the party folks really is the big division in there. But that's how we tease it out, is by asking them like, hey, which one are you a bigger supporter of? And it really helps you dissect that essentially, or segment out that group.
Is any of the polling you're doing digging into the question of how likely those other Republicans would be, you know, the non-hardcore Trump supporters, are going to be to turn out for these Trump candidates? You know, well, are they going to be so Republican and loyal to the party line that they'll go MAGA, or are they thinking?
So that's a great question, because as frankly is that no one unequivocally knows, because frankly, we just really haven't seen this before in general. But what we have seen, at least from the polling, indicates is that, you know, Republicans are very much fired up because, okay, whether you're mad at Trump, everything else, is that, you know, Trump's been definitely a bit more behind the scenes in the last, you know, 6 months or so. And what has been very much in front of it is Joe Biden and the Democrats, who have control of all three levers of power in Washington. They have the presidency, they got Senate, and they have the House. And so when you're the party out of power, you may have some disagreements with some of those ones in there, but you're like, hey, I may have my issue with Trump, but but it's still better than a Democrat. And that's kind of the way the part in the other side, they kind of look at the same way, especially in this hyper partisanship. So, we're not really seeing that, but again, that could change. And that's what's going to be super fascinating about the post-election analysis, is when it gets done, is like, hey, were there Republicans that sat out or didn't land up voting, or they either voted for the Democrat or they just chose to not vote in the election, where they don't vote on some of these key races? And that's where we haven't really seen much of an indication of that, but that could be the case, but we'll know definitively at that point.
The last couple of election cycles, we have seen a fairly significant undervote in some races that seems to have had an impact on the outcome. And how do you go about teasing out those questions after an election? How much work do you do, you know, polling people to figure out why, who made what sort of choices and why after?
Yeah, no, great question. Is that so? There's two ways. One is you tease it out through the data, and I'll give you a perfect example of it. So in the 2020 election for president for here in the state of Arizona, Democrat hasn't carried Arizona in decades, not since Bill Clinton back in the 80s. And when you look at Arizona, is that Trump, you know, lost by about roughly 11,000 votes. So very tight, but it'll end up coming up short. And it's interesting when you look at your post-election of, you know, where Trump overperformed the other top of the ticket race, which was the U.S. Senate race with Martha McSally and Mark Kelly. And so you see that, you know, Trump basically, like, I'll use Maricopa County for an example. Maricopa County was basically all the upper middle income on down, so kind of the middle class areas on down, were voted heavy and hard for Trump. But in places like Paradise Valley, Ahwatukee, Fountain Hills, that are kind of these affluent Republican areas, Martha McSally actually outperformed the top of the ticket, Donald Trump. And again, that kind of probably goes to that whole McCain factor of, you know, banging on McCain and Trump a little bit there. But, you know, basically it was a game of inches of how he lost Arizona. But we saw it very unequivocally that, hey, Republicans weren't fully united on there, and you really had some split ticketing going on.
Mike,
whether they were voting for Biden or, you know, or not voting at all.
Right. Thanks for that. That's very interesting. Mike, we have less than a minute left, but I wanted to ask you, if you were to ask me in a phone call whether I supported Trump, I might give you a different answer than if I were answering that question online. So that speaks to mode, which you were referring to earlier. And I know that Pew Research a couple of years ago went to more online polling, and they found that, yeah, there are differences in answers. Are you considering going online rather than telephone polls?
Yeah, so that's a great question, is that you're seeing kind of this whole mixed mode of survey collection, because it's just not everybody has phones these days, and plus people don't like to talk. And so for mode-wise, for example, older folks, they like talking to a live person. Younger folks, they're petrified to talk to a live person, but they'll text you all day, or they'll interface. As long as they don't have to, like, talk to a human being, they're good with it. And so you see kind of these generational differences, but I think the issue is with the online-based polling, I'm still, when I have a choice of doing, let's say, election polling, and I'm trying to, you know, guess this outcome or get this outcome right, is basically phone base is still the best way to go because you're able to double verify because your source list is based on the voter file. So these people we know are unequivocally registered to vote, but also we know their registration. We know if they voted or not, you know, what they're affiliated. Like, are they registered Republican or are they registered Democrat? Oh, they said they're a Democrat. Like, we have them as a Republican. We can kick them out. And you're able to double verify that. So from the voter file itself, but then also self-verifying in the survey, where the online, because online, best way to describe it, they're kind of like a quantitative form of a focus group. So just like a focus group place has like, I don't know, 4,000 people in their panel. But these people take these surveys not only all the time, but it's not representative typically of the entire population. So you really have to put in a lot more quality control measures in there. And again, most places aren't having it tethered to the voter file. And are you getting that randomized sample? Like, Trump voters, are they in the sample? Or are they more liberal? Like, so again, I think online, it's coming along and we're seeing the industry go that way, but still I would say phone base is still the most dominant when you're trying to get an accurate read on election, on horse races especially.
Very good. Okay, our thanks to Mike Noble. Good interview. Really enjoyed you.
Good.
Hoping
Thank
that we
you.
Can have you back. Where's the best place for listeners to find out more about OH Predictive Insights?
Great question. And again, thanks for having me. It's truly a privilege to contribute, and I know all the great work you all do down there. And so for folks to check out, just go to ohpredictive.com or ohpredictive, our Twitter handle. But basically on ohpredictive, we really try to do a great job. We have blog posts where we really talk about methodology, best practices, all that, but also our press releases, and people can sign up and kind of get the latest. So if you're into data and all that stuff and you want to just see someone shoot it straight, it would be a great resource for them.
Well, we look forward to what you're going to produce here over the next few weeks as we head toward November 8th.
Oh, it can't come soon
it's
enough.
It's going to be busy.
yeah, you're talking preacher of the choir on that one, baby. Okay, thanks a lot, Mike. Really appreciate it.
So, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate
adios.
It.
Okay, this is the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Socolo Village Studio, and you're always invited to join us on the live line, made possible by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. When we return, we're going to launch into the Friday Roundtable with Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. We'll be right back.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. I'm Dan Scheer, sitting in for a vacationing Bill Buckmaster. He'll be back next week. It's time for our Friday roundtable. We have Dylan Smith, editor of TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan, what did you think about Mike Noble and some of the things he was saying?
Well, you know, he's certainly somebody who knows his stuff, and he is one of those pollsters that every time he puts something out, I do go check it out, whereas, you know, some of the more partisan outfits, especially, as he was saying, you know, polls that are released by campaigns wanting to brag about something.
Yeah, yeah.
Those are mostly just a quick chuckle at those, right?
Oh, yeah. You can't, you know, and it's going to...
Maybe they're true, maybe they're not.
It's going to benefit anybody who wants to read and believe polls to go online and just Google what do you need to know going into it. And it's not only the questions that were asked, but how they were asked, of whom were they asked.
The timing of it.
There's so much that goes into this. And even then, it's a little bit of a roll of the dice.
It's certainly, it's about that point spread. And that's the most important thing to keep in mind is the, you know, polls are not absolute measurements by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
The actual measurement that counts is when the votes are counted.
Right. You have been all over this story, an awful story out of the University of Arizona last week where they had a... murder on campus, basically, is what it was, and you have been on it even today. The funeral was this morning for that professor. Tell us about some of your latest reporting and kind of what the last week's been like for you.
Well, our most recent story on this is a pretty detailed, very lengthy, more than 6,000 words special report on what we've been digging into about the shooting death of Professor Thomas Meischner and the former graduate student who was kicked out of the U of A, who is the accused gunman in this case. He's facing a first-degree murder charge. And from what we've learned from one of the Meischner's colleagues, Professor Christopher Castro in the hydrology department there, was that Castro and other professors were for months and months and months alerting UA administrators and police to what they saw was a serious threat from the person who's now the accused shooter.
And how was that met?
They say with indifference, essentially, that basically nothing was done. You know, this person was first within the department. He was a teaching assistant. He lost that job, although they decided to allow him to continue to study. And the confrontations, his, you know, if what these folks call threatening emails to professors and others in the department continued. So he was expelled from school. And then the emails continued for months and months and months. This all started almost a year ago.
And again, all of this is being turned
through just last week.
And all of this is being forwarded to the authorities. And there's basically, they're raising red flags all over the place about this guy.
Red flag after red flag. We had a very lengthy 2.5 hours interview with Professor Castro the other night. And of course, he's, you know, beyond upset and has a lot of survivor's guilt, as anyone would when, you know, seeing their friend and colleague, you know, not seeing, but having that happen and being so involved in it. He thinks that he was also supposed to be a target of this gunman. The shooting happened at a time when those two professors would essentially be changing a classroom. One would be ending his class and walking out, and another one would be showing up, and it was right at that point last week, and the only reason Castro wasn't there is he was out of town at a conference. So he's you know, certainly got a lot of feelings, but also had a lot of facts to share with us. Tons of documents, emails that he provided all about this, explained some of the efforts that he had gone through. And really seems to be a chain of events that was just, you know, one screw up after another, one ball dropped after another.
Well, I know you, and you're going to stay on this. We have Carl on the line. He has a question. Carl?
Yeah, I'm just kind of curious, and I haven't seen anything about it. With this guy's history, how in the world did he become a teaching assistant? I mean, you know, anytime anybody else in the teaching world, they've got to get a background check, fingerprints, and everything else.
Well, I don't think I don't know if TAs would need to go get the sort of FBI check that school teachers do in the K to 12 world, but it does raise some questions about the U of A's hiring processes. You know, certainly, you know, it's important to offer people second chances, but given the lengthy criminal history that we've discovered that this individual has, it does make you sort of raise an eyebrow as to how he ended up here and how all the people in the department were not aware of what went on. And then so Castro took efforts on his own. He was told by the U of A that they wouldn't help him once this person was no longer a student, once he was expelled, and that he had to go get his own injunction against harassment.
Yeah,
which he tried to do, and then that injunction wasn't even served by the Pima County Constable who was tasked with that. The constable had paid one attempt, was told by a neighbor that the guy didn't live there, and
incorrectly.
Well, then this person was evicted a few weeks later, and the person who served the eviction paperwork, the private process server, handed it to him at the very same address.
Well, great work on this, Dylan. I know there's more to come. Thank you, Carl, for your question. Dylan, is there any one thing we can point to that says this is what triggered this guy? This is what set him off?
Well, no. Not at this point. I don't know if we will ever know specifically. This is someone who has a pretty long history of acting out violently. He, you know, attacked his own mother once. He attacked his own father. Pointing to one single thing, you know, certainly he had disagreements that develop into conflicts and then, you know, threats from what we've seen from the emails against some of the professors there in the department. But, was there one instance that made him, you know, quote unquote, snap? It seems to be a much longer sort of process.
That story is up at TucsonSentinel.com. I'd encourage you to read it. It's some great reporting, as we expect from your team. So that is going to wrap up our Friday roundtable. Thank you to Dylan Smith. You can follow his work, as I said, at TucsonSentinel.com. We'll be right back on the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolo Village studio with Matt Russell to help you plan your weekend. Don't forget, our live line is made possible by the professionals over at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. We'll be back in a minute.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Delivering a $2 billion voter-approved regional transportation plan involves complex policy, legal, and financial matters. The Regional Transportation Authority is open to answering any questions you have about delivery of the current RTA 20-year plan or about the development of a new regional transportation plan for the next 20 years. Contact the RTA at info@rtamobility.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rieto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. It is time for the Weekend Watch. It's a great way to plan your next couple of days. Presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. They're just 3 hours east of Tucson. There's a lot to do in Silver City and Grant County, including hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and visiting the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. Find out more about what to do and where to stay at southwestnewmexico.org. Matt Russell, are you there?
I'm here. Always good to catch up with you, Dan.
Yeah, you too. Bring some levity to this Friday. We're about to head into the weekend here.
We are. I'm happy to help you and the listeners plan their weekend. So this one's kind of fun. It sort of honors the historic space that Chinese chorizo once occupied on the southern Arizona food scene. And, you know, learning in our history, there used to be about 100 Chinese grocery stores that populated Tucson all the way back to the late 1800s. Well, the Tucson Chinese Chorizo Festival kicks off this weekend, Dan. So this is how it works. Starting today and throughout every weekend through October, several local restaurants are going to be planning up their own unique expressions of Chinese chorizo. And this weekend's participants include Boca Tacos, Cup Cafe, Forbes Meat Company, and others. And then more restaurants are going to join the roster over the next 2 weekends. So map your route to all participating eateries this weekend and get your Chinese chorizo fit.
That is what I call an event. That's awesome. What else you got for us?
Well, this one's from the You Just Can't Make This Stuff Up file. We've all heard about tequila festivals and Mexican food festivals, but there's an event happening tomorrow and Sunday at Rieto Downs that's dedicated to the garnish. Are you ready? It's the salt and lime fiesta, Dan, and you're going to be able to sip and snack on the kinds of things that both of these staples really make better. There's going to be a taco row, a tequila cave, a margarita oasis. They're going to have a car show, lots of live music, and you've heard of a mechanical bull, Dan, right?
Oh, yeah.
So there's going to be a mechanical taco, and you'll be challenged to hop on and beat the clock. All the details, if you really want to know, are at saltlimefiesta.com.
Is that legal? That's awesome. What a weekend. You got one more.
I do, yeah. It's the annual Jonathan's Chili Cook-Off for charity. It's going to be tomorrow from noon to 2 up at Jonathan's Cork on Tankaverde. This event benefits Send a Kid to Camp. More than 10 local restaurants are going to be ladling out their best chili to see who will take home the hardware. And guests will be choosing the winner themselves by tasting each chili and casting their votes. Admission is only $10, so I say head over to Jonathan's Cork tomorrow to get that chili on.
Matt Russell, thank you for that. Very quickly, tell us, Tucson Foodie, what you got going.
Yeah, in my latest article, I tell a fun story about a fishmonger in Tucson and how his first experience with seafood in the workplace involved an unfortunate encounter with a Filet-O-Fish sandwich. You can check out the story at TucsonFoodie.com.
Thank you, Matt Russell. I really appreciate your time.
Cheers, Dan.
Okay, the Buckmaster Radio Program is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is responsible for the content. Our thanks to our faithful Buckmaster assistant, Rosemary Brandt, and all the others who helped put this show together. You make it a great Friday.